So we're like, we have a great solid family and a foundation, but money can excel your kids to be able to get into business, get into multifamily, single family, all these things. They watch me as I go through my homes. Like, I've made a lot of money with single family. Like, it's a great starting point.
You're listening to The Azria Show. If you're looking for quality real estate investing information that you can trust, you've found it. Stay tuned and join the tens of thousands of members that have already benefited from Azria, your home for education, market information, support, and networking opportunities that will advance your real estate investing career.
What's up, Azria Show? This is Mike Del Pree, Executive Director of The Azria Show. And today you can see I'm flying solo. Marcus Maloney is out on a business trip. So we have a special guest here today, Sophia Willits, right?
Yes.
Real estate investor, creator of Learning Apartments, founder of Grace CRE Multifamily Brokerage. You're going to share a lot of multifamily with us today.
Yes.
Which is very exciting because traditionally everyone gets started in single family and their goal is multifamily.
100%.
Right? So maybe we could talk about just skipping single family, right? You could probably show us that.
Yeah, no. Or, no, I mean, maybe? Single family is a great place to start. And okay. It can get you into multifamily very easily that way.
Get your feet wet.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go over her bio. As a professional real estate broker, she's done over 1,000 transactions in the past 11 years, creating 900 million plus ROIs for her clients. Just make it a billion.
Yeah, probably.
Over the last 3 years, now investing in her own deals and creating 300 to 500% returns on her multifamily acquisitions. Since 90% of multifamily trades off market with a broker, which your brokerage.
Yeah.
This inspires Sophia to help others know how to get off market multifamily properties on their own. Very exciting.
Yeah.
And I love the word off market.
Yeah, right? I love those off market deals.
So start there. Yeah. What's an off market multifamily deal?
Well, a lot of people may not know this, but 90% of all our transactions, just like you said, are actually traded off market. If you want to get a hold of an institutional broker, mm-hmm. most of the time they won't give you the time or day, or even like, especially if you're a newbie, right?
Yep.
You're like, hi, my name is so and so, and I have like $100 million, and like the broker's gonna like pretty much hang up on you or scream at you, especially if you're a new syndicator, wholesaler, trying to like get a broker to send an off market transaction. Mm-hmm. Why the hell would a institutional broker send you a $20 to $100 million deal if you've never even closed one?
Yeah,
it's very difficult. So these brokerages, like what they'll do is they're not NAR members.
Okay.
So that means that they don't have to be part of the National Association of Realtors. So that means that they don't have to follow code of ethics.
Got it.
And they do not have to co-broke, and they will only represent one side. So if you work with a commercial broker that's not an NAR member, their interest is only for the seller.
Wow.
So say if you call like on a listing on like LoopNet, Craxy, any of those type, and you're like, hey, I want to take advantage of this opportunity, and you can show the broker like, hey, like I can maybe close on this. Well, they're going to give you like an offering memorandum that's going to be a performa. They're going to pull out comps that are not necessarily relevant. They're going to pull out rental comps that are not necessarily mm-hmm. relevant. And they're going to come up with a performa that is so far from the actuals that a lot of investors like, oh, like I can get this type of return or this type of cap rate off this deal. And what happens is then like that newer investor or syndication group goes off what the broker says.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you get in with them, then they'll start sending you some off-market deals after you prove that you can already close. But they've also put people in really bad situations.
Yeah.
For the sellers and actually the buyers. So typically what happens is the commercial broker has cherry-picked buyers.
Okay.
And they can get the seller to sell it for a lot less per door without putting it on the market. So they're not even advertised, okay? So a lot of the listings that you actually see, they're actually 90% of them will have an exclusive listing agreement, but you'll never see it online. It will only be to their synergy of buyers, their REITs, their institutions that they want to sell directly to.
Wow. So, and even these owners that have these buildings, they're not calling the mom and pop investors.
Oh, no. They'll go directly always to a broker most of the time. And then they'll do a 1031 and exchange into their next portfolio. So how does a little guy get in?
How does it? So let's go there. You said, so I said, maybe you'll show us how to just get into multifamily, but you said, no, maybe start in single family. So, which I think is great because that resonates with us here at Esria, mostly single family under 20 units, right? But everyone always does want to go bigger. So how did you start
real
estate invest?
So my dad actually was a real estate investor. He's from Austria. He was raised in the World War II era. And so, like, he was actually adopted out in the war. So he didn't have, like, a lot of good opportunities, but definitely struggled with school, like, had to work really hard for everything that he had. So only making it into the fifth grade and then getting, like, working for the butcher shop or working in the streets of Austria or all these, like, construction jobs, he wanted something more for himself. So he moved here when he was 21.
Cool.
And he didn't speak English. He only spoke German. But he was able to get a job working for a German mechanic, and they liked his hustle so much, they sent him to car school and learn how to become a mechanic. But that's for a season, right? So when I say, like, everything's for a season, you know, that can take a toll on your body, right? So when he moved here from 21, working in the car industry, and then, you know, not wanting to be commissioned anymore, he ended up buying his own car lot here in Phoenix.
Oh, wow.
But his body took a toll. So pretty much, like, broke his, like, back. He had multiple back surgeries and couldn't really work on cars anymore. So what he did was he sold his car lot and bought apartments at 36 and pretty much semi-retired.
Wow.
So I was raised with an investor.
So that was here in Phoenix.
Yeah. And okay. We had a single family home, like, back in the day, I think when we bought our house and my dad bought the house in the 80s with my mom, they were married and I think he bought his apartments when I was three, but, you know, like, that was like 11% rate. So, like, and he bought his building for like $5,000 to $10,000 a unit.
Oh, that's amazing.
And, like, I mean, he was charging $100 to $150 rents. Wow. But my dad was a total slumlord. He did everything himself. Like, he would go dumpster diving. I would hide in the car because I didn't want to be seen in the car that my dad's a dumpster diver. He used to threaten me if I wasn't being good to go live there with the tenants. So he's like, I'll go live there. So I was like, no. He talks like Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's kind of funny. But
that's funny.
But it was a hard upbringing. We didn't have AC in our house here in Arizona. That was a luxury. Didn't have AC in our cars. That was a luxury. I really thought we were poor growing up.
Wow.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy.
So I think about my son. I'm always like, come to the office. Let's go see a house. You know, he's like, whatever, Dad. So I still push it on him.
Yeah.
Hopefully one day it'll come around. So were you growing up, were you just like, I hate that building? Or did you?
Yeah, I hated it. Yeah, I was like, why the hell do we have this thing? And but it was our income, you know? And my mom just worked part-time for benefits and stuff. But my dad was financially free.
Wow.
You know amazing. What I mean? Which is incredible. But, you know, like, I hustled. I had a lot of different jobs because my parents didn't give me any, like, allowance or anything. So I started working when I was 12.
Wow.
And I started doing sales door-to-door for candy, like, at 14. And, you know, like, I hustled.
That's hard. Yeah.
And I actually bought my first house when I was 19, and I house hacked it.
Before it was called house hacking?
Yeah. So I rented out every single room, including my laundry room.
So 19, what inspired you to do that? Why did you want to buy a house? Why didn't you just
I was 18 rent? Because, like, my parents were investors. I never...
So, okay, they pressed that upon you as well.
Yeah, they never pushed me to buy a house, but I was like, I ain't renting. Like, there's no opportunity in that. And I never saw my parents rent anything, so I was just led by example and got my first place, and I was cash flowing, you know?
Love it.
Yeah, and then what I did was...
Still on that house?
Oh, no. I ended up, like, getting a... What happened was, like, when I was, like, 21, I got a really good sales job at Lazy Boy.
Okay.
And this is, like, now starting to become the mid-2000s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I first initially got the house, I was making, like, $35,000. And that time, it was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then when I got my sales job at Lazy Boy, I was making, like, $65,000 a year. I was making $7,000 a year. I thought I was a baller.
Wow.
So, I was just like, yo. Like, so I'm 41 now. So, like.
Why not, like, customer service or something? What made you go to
sales? I've always been really good in sales.
It's just natural.
I started at 14. I was like, I gotta make some money.
Yeah.
Like, so I've always pretty much been like commission jobs or like odds and end jobs there, but I wanted to start buying real estate. You know, like, I sold my house, bought another house, and I'm like, I'm gonna buy all this real estate. And my papa at the time was like, I'm gonna sell my apartments in the mid, like, 2006.
Okay.
He's like, Sophia.
Before, so that was right before the crash.
Yeah.
Okay.
He He's like, don't buy anything. You're going to lose everything. I'm like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm making all this money. Like all my sales associates that what I worked with were all buying real estate. We're buying things through Countrywide. And, you know, like, we're going to be millionaires, blah, blah, blah.
It's never going to end.
Yeah. So my dad sold.
Smart.
And then I lost everything in 07. So wow. I had 3 foreclosures, a bankruptcy, $1 million in debt at 24. And now I'm like a newlywed too. I had to get a loan modification on my house and just everything was pretty much going to shit. And I lost my sales job at Lazy Boy because who was buying furniture at that time now?
Yeah, nobody.
Yeah.
So what did your dad know?
My dad recognized. Why did he know? He recognized the pattern.
Yeah.
And, you know, we never really had the rent growth, even in the mid-2000s here in Arizona. So, you know, like that was my learning lesson that costed me. But I'd never stopped loving real estate. Well, so,
okay, jump in. Like the power there. So your dad gave you the advice. So what I'm saying is the power of community and like mentors and being around people doing it. Right? Because a lot of people, when they get into single family or investing, they're like, the cousin says, or the family member say, you're crazy. It's a scam. You get where I'm coming from. Yeah. So people that are not in our world and they're new to it, they're nervous to get in because you have your goal. You want to say, what was it, 9% of people don't actually end up buying their first multifamily.
Yeah, you know what? So, it's crazy because like people get into these mentorship groups, they'll spend anywhere from $10,000 to $45,000 to $60,000 in these multifamily groups, but only less than 9% of the students actually get a deal.
So if you, so meaning you, your dad was there. Sometimes we learn the hard way. I still
did. And they didn't really have like a lot of those. They had some, I think, mentorship groups, but not like they do today, especially. But
the power was knowing someone in the business.
Yeah.
They have those ideas and those conversations.
And he was a little apartment owner, but like he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, that's huge. Yeah. Being around people that know what they're doing will help you become more successful. So,
I mean, like he was selling his apartments now at $75,000 a unit. He saw the market. He saw this window of opportunity.
Yeah.
So obviously I lost everything. I went back to actually beauty school. I finished up my hair license and I wanted to, you know, I got pregnant during the recession and, you know, I wanted to stay home part time and be a mom.
Awesome. My wife was a hairstylist and we owned a hair salon as well.
Oh yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I built a salon in my garage and, but like I wasn't making money. I mean, people couldn't even afford to get a haircut in 08.
Yeah.
People were struggling.
They were struggling. Wow. So you got through it, but I would say having that trade, that skill probably helped you get weather the storm at some level.
Yeah. It you know, like I loved what I did, but I was really struggling because we were putting groceries on credit cards and we were living like this for now 6 years. And I'm like, this has to stop. Yeah. I'm like, I'll never get out of this race. So now I have my second baby. My daughter's 2.5. My son's 5 months. And I was looking down at my pay stub because I was working at the salons and the malls too. And I'm like, I have $343 to my retirement. Mm. What am I going to do? I'm like, I can't keep living this way. So what I did was I told my ex-husband, I'm like, I need to go back into sales. And he's like, it's not the right time. You haven't given salon enough time. I'm like, it's never going to be the right time. You just have to go in. And I still loved real estate, even though like I made those mistakes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I want to do it different this time. I want to be a real estate agent.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, you know, now it's 2013 and I saw people are making like 65,000. And for me, that was a dream coming from like when I first was doing it in my early 20s. And I'm like, can I ever see that money again? Because the market was so down.
It was.
Yeah. So what I did was I went full time to real estate school and my broker that I ended up working for, he actually sent me a letter and would pass by it every single day. Like it would just be on my table. And so
you're at school, like the brokers were.
Yeah. And I had 10 brokerages that I was interviewing with. I actually thought I was going to sell pretty little houses.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So funny enough, I was like, I'm going to just go see him because like this is a letter that's been sitting on my table for the past month. But long story short, I actually worked for him when I was 17 and he fired me because I was a terrible receptionist because he kept on catching me play games at his office. But I went and saw him and I saw him in the parking lot. I'm like, hey. He's like, yeah. I'm like, I'm here for an interview. He's like, okay. And he's looking at me. He's like, you look familiar. I'm like, oh gosh, do I tell him he fired me?
Yeah,
I'm like, you fired me. And he's like, are you sure I fired you? I'm like, yeah. He did.
yeah, I remember that day.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm obviously like I'm 16 years older now, and
yeah,
you know, I'm ready to work. And he told me I could sell multifamily, I could sell commercial, I could sell industrial and houses. I was like, okay, every other single residential brokerage, I'm not allowed to do that. So I felt more recession proof.
Oh, okay.
So I hung my license with him and I'm like, you know, my dad owned apartments. He's like, I'm not saying that's going to be your niche. Well, it definitely was. I sold my first fourplex within the first 10 days. I sold 24 buildings my first year, and I was able to retire my ex-husband, but he was my current husband at the time. Yeah. So
wow, so that was your first year as a sales agent doing multifamily. And at that time, 2013, you're probably selling to Canada.
Yeah, we're selling Canada. Yeah. Definitely local investors, mm-hmm. a lot of people from California. The average sales price then was 35 to like 50 a door.
Yeah.
I was selling four plexes for $150,000 to $200,000. And like, it was just incredible, you know?
So you got the bug.
Oh, yeah. Right. And then like, I kept on doing really well, but it just showed like my current marriage was like really suffering. It was a very unhealthy relationship. So I just want to encourage people, like, make you, like, people say like money doesn't matter. Money can get you out of bad situations. Mm-hmm. And it can actually create the freedom that you want to have to create the life you want to have. So I was able to leave a bad marriage and actually meet my new husband. Mm-hmm. He's my partner now. He's our designated broker of our company, Grace.
Okay.
CRE. And, you know, it's amazing, like, how much better my life is to actually have a parent that I can co-parent with. Like, my husband instantly stepped up, was an instant father for my kids within like pretty much the first, second day I met him. Like, he wanted to be there for my kids, and you can't pay someone to do that.
True.
Either somebody wants to be a dad or they don't. Yep. So definitely, well, God was looking out for me for sure.
So touch on that then, spouse support. Like, that's one big thing. We do some programs, like a mini business plan, action plan for new investors.
Yeah.
And the first thing I tell them, bring your spouse. They don't have to be in the business with you.
But yeah, they have to be on board.
Be on board. Expose them to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Right. That's all. And just be on the same page. Because if I've seen through the years, just seen too many people just quit before they got ahead just because someone in the family didn't think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So how, any tips on that?
You know, your spouse can bring you down. Like, I wanted to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And all I got was constantly criticized. Oh, you don't have to make $1 million. You don't have to do this. But like, yeah, you wanted me to pay for everything. Like, my ex-husband decided to not work anymore. He actually got his real estate license and then quit. Just wanted to be a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah.
But then tear me apart at home when I had to work. Mm. It doesn't work that way. Yeah. So like, your spouse needs to be your best friend and your partner. Like, if you guys are making money together and growing together, that can be the most beautiful and like sexy thing in your guys' relationship. Like, you guys are partners and you're growing together. You're able to pay for these things for your family. You're able to create the life you want to have. What's not sexy is someone putting you down. Oh, you can't make it, or hey, like, whatever. It's not gonna work. So, you know, I feel like if you guys are on the same page and you guys can actually work and grow together, it's hard when you're married to be able to do that. But if you have your best friend doing it with you, it's so much more fun.
I agree. That's how we've done it. Yeah.
Like
you'll be at a store or a restaurant and you're just like breaking down the business and like, or the phone rings in the middle. Like, you don't get upset.
My husband handles like all the operations and the legal. Like, he can read a contract. He can write like an attorney. He's amazing. Mm-hmm. But I'm really good at sales. And so like, we complement each other and we help and serve each other so much and our clients that way.
There you go. That's perfect. Again, knowing your boundaries, either whether the spouse is in it or not, they should understand what's going on, be supported of it. Or if you're a team like yourself, know who's good at what and everyone stay in their lane.
Yeah, right? It's good because like, you know, you mentioned like your son, right? Mm-hmm. Like, my son, since I've been so successful with real estate, we've been able to invest into his hockey career. So we call it a youth career,
that's
right?
That's not cheap.
No, we're spending over $100,000 plus, like, he's going to Paris this summer.
Travel,
he's going to Canada.
Equipment.
Yeah, he's going to Colorado. He just got accepted to play in Florida Alliance, which is a top 7 team in, like, the country. Like, all this costs a lot of money and time and sacrifice. But guess who's, like, taken that time to go make his youth career happen. That's my husband. Mm-hmm. It's us as a team, as a family. We're all in it together. We're bringing our families to go on these trips and events. But, you know, my, like right now, what I'm teaching my son is, hey, you get $1 million contract, a $22 million contract to play for the NHL. They're going to take 40 to 50% of that away from you from taxes. So I'm actually teaching him how to get into apartments now. He's only 11. Amazing. And I've actually started making him make phone calls to apartment owners at 10 years old. So if my son can get a yes, he's only 10. Okay.
Yeah.
Then anybody can.
Does he like lower his voice on the
no.
phone?
No. No. But you know, he's a kid.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, I'm an entrepreneur. Yeah. I'm an entrepreneur.
I would literally take that call if a kid called me.
I know. He's so sweet. And he's like, I'm an intern at Guace Equities. You should see the video on.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But he wanted $1,500 shoes. I'm like, dude, get on the phones and hustle for it. He wanted off whites. I'm like, dude, you need to work for that. Like, he worked so hard on his youth career, but I ain't buying him $1,500 shoes. I'm like, you can earn that.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. So you can earn that. Yeah. So, cool. And then, you know, my daughter, she's in the Junior Honor Roll Society. And then we have our little baby. Me and my husband have our little baby together. Mm-hmm. So we're like, cool. We have a great solid family and a foundation, but money can excel your kids to be able to get into business, get into multifamily, single family, all these things. They watch me as I go through my homes. Like, I've made a lot of money with single family. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a great starting point.
So what have you done in single family? Have you invested in single? Like, so you kicked off, was it 24 deals in your first year?
Yeah.
When did you start in investing?
So, good question. It wasn't until 2019. And okay. I was asked to go speak at, I don't know if you know this group, Renatus.
Yeah.
Help teach multifamily. Mm-hmm. I went with one of the teachers there and I started teaching for a night, and somebody brought me a wholesaler. He didn't have the deal. Nobody had the deal because I guess it got out of contract a couple times because they didn't know what they had. It was a 7-plex in Tempe. Okay. So I reached out to the directly to the owner, and the owner was a HomeSmart broker.
Okay.
So he didn't know where the comps were at. I just went based off the income approach and gave him the offer on that, non-refundable. I was going to just give the deal away for a 3% co-broke, but I was like, when is it going to be my turn? So after, you know, like closing on this deal, all I did was take photos and put it back on the market. And I made $373,000 within like a couple weeks.
Oh, so let's back up a little bit on that deal. So one, you're networking, teaching again, right?
But, yeah.
So, and then the opportunity comes on the table. You want to take it down. So you said there's two ways to income. You said to use it.
Income approach.
And what's the other one?
The comp approach.
Comp approach.
Because it's a commercial one. Anything that's above 5 units is considered to be commercial.
Got it. And so now there's a lot there. So did you take it down or did you
wholesale? I took it down. No, I took it down.
Okay. And how'd you get the money?
I put, like, what I had was after my divorce, I had a self-directed pension plan. So I'm able to reduce my income by investing into my own self-directed pension plan.
Got it.
So I took $90,000 and the rest was on hard money. I took photos and I sold it within a few days and closed on it within a few weeks.
Wow.
After I closed that deal and like making that quick money, I was like, I got to do this shit again. So like I flipped like about 16 buildings in the past 2.5 years and I was able to grow to $6 million.
And that's all in Phoenix area. Yeah. Okay. So now what, that's a big jump, 340,000, right? It's like so
my highest commission year of being just a broker was 750,000.
Nice.
Like, but that was me working my ass off doing like over 100 transactions. And the unfortunate thing is a lot of brokers and agents don't realize this, that you're giving all your deals away. Yes. I probably at least given away $500 to $900 million worth of deals just by like giving opportunities to other people. And it's insane. It's like, when's it going to be your turn? Like, why are you giving your deals away? It's crazy.
We were talking about before the show, like we had a group of 100 agents in here, and out of 100 agents, 6 of them own rental property. Like, I think you're doing yourself a disservice and your clients a disservice if you just don't, just for not understanding the investing world, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. And it's crazy. And also too, like at the time I was like, is it okay to get back in the seat again, like ride the horse. Like I lost everything at such a young age, but like I've been recognizing and studying the patterns enough to see where the cycles were going that I felt confident enough to actually invest.
So now you got that deal. You made a nice chunk of money. Yeah. What did you do next with it?
I bought more apartments. I bought another Aplex and just grew it to the...
Were you keeping them? Or
no, I was flipping them all.
Oh, so...
Because I knew it was for a season.
Got it. So, because you... the further back you understand history, the further you can see the future, right?
Yes. So it was for a short season. It was for a period of time. So I really slowed down in 22. I ended up losing money on one deal. I was partnering with a couple of my other investors. Mm-hmm. It was a 53 unit in Arcadia, or right off of Thomas. And there's a couple reasons why I walked away from this deal. One was it was worth about 14.5 to 15 when we were buying it. And then we had like 5 rate increases within a couple of weeks in like the first part of like April, May. Mm-hmm. And then all the lenders started ghosting me. Oh. That was the first time that ever happened. And then at that point, the only lender that would lend on it was a hard money lender. And I was like, how are you going to be able to refinance? I'm like, let's look for permanent financing. And nobody really wanted to touch it. And then I was also paying attention to the evictions. Like there was like 7,800 or 5,500 evictions during that month, like we were supposed to close. I'm like, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. And I chose to walk away. I didn't let my investors lose their deposit. So I was the one who lost $480,000.
Wow.
So it was a big loss, but it just traded in June in 23 for 8.4. So I saved myself like $4.5 million.
So you still held it?
No, I walked away.
Got it.
But I would have taken a $4.5 million loss.
Yes. Got it.
No, thank you.
No. So what did you learn there?
I learned that one, I broke my own rule, which is buying majority once and a master meter building.
Oh, okay.
Okay. And then where
could you explain master meter for people that are
So if you buy a building that's master meter, you're responsible for all the tenants. But like I actually broke my own rule because there were some other ones that had just recently traded in the same area for around the same price or actually more that were master metered, and it was a better location, so I felt I was going to be safer. But unfortunately, like the market, we can't control the interest rates. Now everyone that's bought in the last 3 to 4 years weren't so lucky, because now they're losing their buildings or having large capital calls, and they didn't want to lose their deposits, because everyone that were going in on these deals in the last 3 to 4 years would always go in non-refundable. The minimum would be like $100,000 to, you know, $400,000 as a standard to get a contract, because everyone was bidding on these contracts. Wow. I mean, the interest rates were really low. And then, or people would get bridge notes where they put down 10 to 15%. And then they would refinance in 18 months to 3 years. But unfortunately, they caught wind of the interest rate. Now, like, they're stuck in their deals.
So what are they going to do?
60% of all the owners here in Arizona will lose their buildings.
And it'll go back to the banks? Or do you
They'll go back to the banks. Like, I'm not even, like, calling the actual owners anymore. I'm just going direct to the banks.
Wow. Do you think they're going to get flooded with these?
Oh, we are. And there's millions of units actually coming due. It's going to be the biggest transfer of wealth in the next 12 to 18 months.
And do you think, are they going to be like short sales, or like, what do you think?
Potentially, because what happened was when I walked away from that deal, the vacancy went way up. The rents have dropped over 25%.
Yeah.
Yep. And then now like the rates are like in the high sixes, high sevens. So you can't cash flow.
Yeah.
So to get into a deal, you need like 65% down to get an actual loan. That's frustrating. So then the sellers are still like, I want this price per unit, and they haven't come down to reality. But if you really think about it, with all those buildings I flipped, I'll give you an example. I sold a fourplex in Old Town Scottsdale for $575,000 a unit. How is it? That's a price of a house. It was never worth that.
Yeah.
But I made it look pretty, and I put an Airbnb tenant that was giving me $2,800 a month in rent. And I was renting it out like where they were paying for all utilities and everything. It was like almost like a triple net. Here you go.
Yeah.
So the investor would buy it, sold that all cash within 4 days.
Wow.
I made $1.1 million off a little fourplex.
Good for you.
And then, you know, same thing. I bought 3 fourplexes together. I got that one off a mailer. The seller, I had 2 people under contract twice.
You do a lot of mailers, or used to do a lot of mailers.
I do.
I think I used to get your mailers all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, because I had some stuff in Sunny Slope. I don't know.
I send out 7,000 pieces a month.
I was on your list.
Yeah. So that deal was great because, like, the people were like, oh, well, it's not cash flowing. Mm-hmm. It's a two cap. It needs too much work. I'm like, you know what? I'll just buy it. So I bought it and made $1.3 million on that deal, almost $1.4 million.
Wow.
So, like, it was a season, right?
Mm-hmm.
But people didn't want to let go of that season.
Never.
And when people were going in with institutional brokers, the brokers were telling them what they wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. And those guys are losing big time.
So never listen to the pro forma. Do your own due diligence.
Yeah, and that's what I teach, because, like, mm-hmm. I've never lost an investor money on any deal I've ever sold. And a lot of people can't say that.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like, I can sleep at night knowing that I'm not harming people.
So let's go. So, great story. So we went from beginning till today, almost today.
Yeah.
So when you say seasons, you've been saying that a lot, right? So we're ending in, we just ended one.
Uh-huh.
You're saying we're going into the biggest transfer of wealth. So for our Azria members, the single family operators, the small multifamily operators, like, what do they do? Can we put together, like, a action plan? Because, right, like you said, who's going to, a new person that wants to call, they're not going to call the bank. How do I even call the bank? So
yeah, no, I teach that.
Okay, you do.
Yeah,
All right.
I teach that.
So outside of what you teach, like, what's some actionable steps that newer or smaller investors can do to get into your world?
Number one, invest in yourself.
Okay.
Okay, and what I mean by that is education.
Mm-hmm.
They can invest in my course, Learning Apartments. I created a course to teach people how to get a deal with or without a broker.
Okay.
And how to protect their assets, mm-hmm. which is your rear end compared to, like, somebody else's. So, like, if the broker's not going to represent you and you don't get a broker to have representation, what are you going to do? You better really know what you're doing. And that's why I created this. And also, too, I want to give the little guy an opportunity to actually get a deal.
Yep.
Because honestly, like, I can't even tell you how many duplexes I've bought that the listing agent lists it wrong. They list it as a house, and I'll buy it and I'll make like $200,000.
That's another part of agents not understanding investing.
Yeah.
Yes, you can grab deals on MLS.
You know what really, it ticks me off a little bit. People will buy Zillow leads, right? Like an agent.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll call me and try to ask questions, and they don't have a clue what it is. I'm like, I really want to make sure that people have this course opportunity, whether they're a new investor, a new wholesaler, syndicator, or a new sales agent, to at least get started properly, so that way they don't harm themselves or their clients.
No, it's great. I love that. I have a friend, he owns a lot of commercial buildings in Central Phoenix, and I was like, what would you do if you had to do it over again? He's like, you know, I'll go back and buy all these little multifamilies all around town.
Yeah.
He's a big commercial guy.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'll just buy fourplexes.
You know? I know. And you know what? The reason why I'm in my niche, the 2 to 100 unit range trades every 18 months or less, or sometimes I'll trade the same deal 2 to 3 times a year.
So when you say, I know what you mean by trade, but like every 18 months, it's...
They trade.
Just... Okay, so the average homeowner sells every 6 to 8 years. So you're saying the average multifamily sells every 18 months.
Yeah, and sometimes 2 to 3 times in 1 year.
Wow.
That's why I love my niche.
Interesting.
I call it my bread and butter.
Okay, so education.
Okay, so they're mismanaged. They're mismanaged. A lot of investors will buy out of state.
Mm-hmm.
They're not making a return, and they want to get rid of them.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Do they usually, do you notice they're more motivated sellers, like selling at a discount, or?
It just depends. Right now, like, a lot of sellers are kind of like, have their leg in between their tail in between their legs, and like, they're not able to make like the sales, or they owe too much. So they're kind of like in trouble right now, and they're seeing what they can do to hang on. So right now it's been very difficult because, like, we have like what our prices are supposed to be right now. And then our sellers think they still want 21 pricing.
Yeah.
For Arizona, it's like a huge loss. This is why I expanded it into another market. So I'm recognizing the same pattern that I saw here.
Got it.
5 years ago in Florida.
That's cool. You said, so you're in Florida doing that.
Yeah.
There was a guy in Newport. He's doing multi. He came in here like in 17, 18, was just buying up a bunch of multifamily. And he would say he would just look for cities that are 3 years behind another city in this travel. And he went to Houston. Like once Phoenix started getting oversaturated, he went to Houston.
Yeah. Or something like that. So I see the pattern recognition. I'll give you an example. Cool. So instead
of... That's a lot of work though. Like okay, we're jumping the gun. Right? So so once again, education and building your skill.
Yeah, because if you're went and got my broker's license. Me and my husband got our broker's license. We started the process in May of 23. Mm-hmm. And we just opened up our shop. We have a office
in Florida.
Yeah, in Las Olas, in Fort Lauderdale.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah, we're right off of Las Olas, and now like I just pick up a fourplex in Fort Lauderdale. I got it for $650. I let the agent represent me. There was 15 offers on it. I had to come in, pretty much non-refundable. Got the deal, but I can exit for $1.4 million.
Wow. So like, well, that's a big process. So we're talking. You're jumping cities now. So they got to build a team.
I already have my sales team out there already.
Okay. Got it.
So like my agents and my people that work for me are extremely loyal.
Got it.
And everyone that works for our brokerage is an investor. So we do deals together. We make things happen.
So to go back to the actionable tips. So get your education.
Yes. And definitely get, like, I know people are like, oh, I can do this without a real estate license. Yes, you can. But you can have a lot more perks when you're licensed.
Like what?
Self-directed pension plan, self-directed 401k. You can pay yourself a commission off your flips. Mm-hmm. And if you buy them in your self-directed 401k or self-directed pension plan, you don't have to worry about a 1031 exchange and buying into a building you don't want.
Yeah.
So you can really grow your retirement and also pay yourself commissions.
Wow. So... And I love that. And I've never been against, everyone says, should I get my license or not when I'm becoming an investor?
I know some people like really frown upon it. I'm like, why?
Yeah,
like this is like, you know, contract law, you know how to protect yourself.
There you go. And it's not needed, but like the perks.
No, I mean, like there's just too many perks not to not have it.
You know, my wife and I, so she's an agent investor. So we would cold call the same list and would have our caller call cash offer. And then we would say, call the same list. Hey, want to list your house top dollar?
Yeah.
She got more conversations. And then those people that were truly motivated, they would open up to her more because she's a licensed agent. They
probably, yeah, I don't, so what, you're a professional, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And it definitely helps. But like, honestly, you have access to like so much more like subscriptions that you can't see as a wholesaler if you're not licensed. So awesome. I definitely encourage it. But I also teach what subscriptions you need to have to get into multifamily to get the off-market owners without having an MLS subscription too.
Can you share something? Can you give us a tip?
Yeah. So the biggest tip for them is to just sign up for our course. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like the biggest life-changing event for them, honestly. Mm-hmm. We have like a pre-launch offer right now. It's super affordable. Anybody can get into it. And also has a 30-day money-back guarantee. Cool. And then I also am launching a software called Pro Underwriter. So let's talk about institutional brokers and Excel, okay? Mm-hmm. When you're an institutional broker, and this is why I don't work at the big houses, is you have to make 100 to 150 calls a day. You also have to have a finance degree typically or a degree in real estate. And you have to really know Excel. Did you know like... out of like 150 deals of underwriting, it takes about 659 hours, and it's like you might get one. Who has time for that?
So is that the going rate, 150 deal, evaluate 150 deals, maybe get one deal?
Yeah.
Is that where it's at? Okay.
Could, like, how many hours is that going to take you?
Yeah.
Like you need a full-time underwriter.
Especially multifamily.
Yeah. Who has time for that? So I like to not necessarily cut corners, but I like to save time because time is money. Mm-hmm. So I partnered up with a software company and created Pro Underwriter. And so now you can drop an Excel file. It underwrites it for you. Actually will do like the T12 parser for you. It shows all the red flags for people that are deficient, people that don't have like an actual deposit. And it actually will print out an LOI for you less than 10 minutes. So now you can write out all these LOIs to brokers or directly to the owners and not have to spend 1,000 hours underwriting a freaking deal.
So let's go back up a little bit on that, because so you take the Excel, which is the T12, the rent rolls and all that, right? So trailing 12 means the performance of the last 12 months on that specific property. Whereas when we talked about pro forma, for those that are listening, the agents try to sell you on what it can do,
right?
But they don't tell you what it's been doing, right?
Right. It costs money. And then who's going to like point out all those things, right? Yeah. If you don't have a full time underwriter and you're a new investor, and then you know what's great too is the software actually shows you what the daily rate is, like what's actually going on in the treasury, and it'll calculate what the going rate is for that day and what a loan quote will actually be. It's so incredibly helpful.
So
it also does a flood, like it actually will show it on the map if it's in a flood zone, because then you have to factor in that for insurance. So like there's so much work to do a larger deal, but like this is why people can't get one. It just takes so much work, so you need a whole entire team, you need all this stuff. But you don't have to have that necessarily anymore.
That's interesting. I had a conversation actually at the conference we were at. It was like, it's to the point where it's just like comping and estimating repairs is the most important skills you need to have, because you're writing the check.
I teach that, because a lot of people don't know how to comp a multifamily. That's a whole nother beast. Not just based off the income approach. There's a comp approach, but I've also created comps that have never been done before. Because you have to create a strategy and you have to create an opportunity. And I'm doing the same thing now in Florida. I did that here for almost three years, but now I'm doing the same strategy there in Florida, because I recognize the pattern of the exits there now too.
So now with technology, it's like you could just drop the information in, and it seems pretty
on point. It's with AI too. It's we have ChatGPT, right?
Yep.
Like we have to get people to like post your stuff on social media. Like we don't have that time, you know, like we're like an instant gratification. Like, do you really want to go through 150 deals to maybe get one? It's a lot of work.
You still have to do it, but you just got to do it fast. You're saying do it fast,
but leverage like 659 hours. That's a lot.
Wow. So then you said LOI, letter of intent, which is different than single family.
Yeah. World. So like if we're doing like a 5-unit or above and we're directly, you know, dealing with an attorney on one side or a broker, like we start off with like an LOI, a letter of intent.
Yeah.
Or we can go right to a PSA, which is your purchase sale agreement, depending on like who's drafted it up. If it's like through an institution brokerage, and normally you'll have an attorney draft up something a little bit of a larger deal.
So are you just pulling, well, I guess you're getting the data from the owner or the broker, and you're just dropping an Excel file into the program.
Yeah. And I already do my own due diligence on the markets. Cause like I look at multifamily, like the stock market, I'm constantly like trading or watching like every single little thing, or I'm watching like the rent drop or the growth. I'll give you an example. The average sales price right now in Fort Lauderdale is $352,000 a door. Mm-hmm. The vacancy is 6%. The average rent is $2,750. That's insane.
Wow.
Okay. And like they're still going up. Here now, like let's give a Phoenix, for example, it's a 10 to 14% vacancy.
Mm-hmm.
The average rent now is like, it's getting down to like $1,250. Okay. That's a big drop.
I have a one bedroom unit. I dropped $200 already. Just trying to find that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like some people are like, oh, well, I don't want to reduce the rates. Like, well, there's so much competition. Mm-hmm. We had all that new construction that's hit the market from like during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think downtown Phoenix is like a 23% vacancy. There's so much.
Really?
Yeah. And then there's 2 to 3 months rent for free. There's approximately 392,000 units available for rent. Okay.
Wow.
Phoenix is a bit in trouble, and it's going to take us 5-10 years to recover.
And that kills the mom and pop that has these small triplexes, because you can't compete with the luxury yoga and pool and gym with these new builds, right?
Yeah.
If they drop their rents and give you 3 months free, like...
Yeah, you're like, oh, hell. Like,
where do I want to live?
And we have 15,000 more scheduled brand new construction units to be delivered by the end of the year.
Wow, so even more on the market.
Yeah.
So you're saying you're catching Florida before they go through this?
Potentially. They're having an average of 4,000 people moving there a day. So some people are complaining like, oh, well, you're kicking out the natives. And it's like, I've had people talk a lot of shit on my social media about Phoenix. Oh, you're the one who's not making Phoenix affordable. I'm like, dude, I am not the one.
Yeah.
I'm the least of your problems.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go look at like the bigger like REITs that are buying everything. Seriously.
Blackstone, BlackRock, whatever it was, 40%, 44%.
Yeah, like you got housing. Bigger problems than me.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
So true.
I'm such a small fish in this pond, right? Mm-hmm. So like seriously, but people will be like, oh, well, I'm moving. Or people are like, I don't want to invest in Florida because of the taxes and insurance. Well, guess what? Our insurance here has doubled. So what's the difference?
37% last year.
Yeah, it's, and you know what? Like, I've seen it double on a lot of people's stuff right now. And even for my own, I'm like, why the hell am I paying this? I'm like, we don't have, like, earthquakes, like, very rarely, tornadoes. We don't have, like, a giant ocean of, like, a tsunami or any of that stuff. But, like, I think it's just a national thing. I think they're trying to, like, push people. I think they're trying to push the middle class out.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doesn't want to go down a whole nother world.
Yeah. I did a podcast yesterday with a management company, Rosenbaum. They're down in Gilbert, but she says it's a blue state now. I'm like, what do you mean it's a blue state? She's like, when we evict a tenant, even though our rights here in Arizona have always been very red, like we can get rid of them quickly, she says now they're letting the tenants stay.
There's 24 anti-landlord bills being proposed in Arizona. So Mark Zimmern, I'm sure you're familiar with Mark, top eviction attorney. Yeah, if we don't vote right, or if you're a landlord, vote where you want to vote. But if
I don't even think our votes really count anymore since everything's went down. I don't like what Arizona's turned into. Like, I live out in North Scottsdale. Mm-hmm. When, like, the Barrett Jackson was going on and, like, the Phoenix Open was going on, they had a sting operation. They arrested 155 pedophiles that were trying to sex traffic children.
Wow.
This is in North Scottsdale. Like, I don't feel safe.
Wow, interesting.
Like, I don't feel safe here at all. Yeah, like, and they are getting away with it. And our borders are open. So, like, we have, like, bigger problems than people realize, in my opinion.
Yeah. So we can go. Yeah, politics. Let's get back to multifamily. But off air, yes, we'll keep going. So multifamily, you're in Florida. So another thing I want to talk about is 2019 to early 2024. Like, I heard you were like 7-unit, 8-unit, 53-unit. Then all these big numbers.
Mm-hmm.
What can you share with someone that's just like, so there's always these levels,
right?
To all, no matter how successful you are, right, from beginning to whatever, we're always trying to break a barrier. So that's fast. That's impressive. So, like, what are some things?
I think everyone that is looking to buy a house right now, definitely either buy a single family, rent out your rooms, do the house hack or the pad split, or get into multifamily in a different market, do the FHA, or now, since like November of 23, they passed a 5% down on a duplex to a fourplex. So that means you can get a loan up to 1.55. Like, it's a lot of money to get a little
apartment. For 5% down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. And then if you're licensed, you can use your commission as a down payment, get the seller to actually pay for your closing costs. You almost come in with no money.
Yeah. And going back... into the politic thing, but moving out the middle class, buy a house, right? Like, usually in when you started and I started, it was like, is the market going up? Is it going down? I'm going to wait, whatever it is. Now it's a different
world. Like, I'll give you an example. I remember buying my house in 18, one of my houses that me and my husband wanted to start a new family. We got married, but the house at the time was 642. I thought that was so much money back then. Like, $642,000, and it needed a ton of work. And I even canceled the contract. I'm like, I don't want to spend this type of money on a house. Yeah. Like,
now there's no houses.
I know.
And it's like, in over time, real estate is great, right? Time heals real estate. So it's like, I have my house, my mortgage payment is $1,300.
Oh, yeah.
Right? In Central Phoenix, right? So, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, so when kids can't afford a house now or can't get into an opportunity now, you're actually, like, for your kids, if you buy houses now, your kids won't be struggling in the future, like, trying to get their own house. It may be something you pass down because rent's going to be crazy.
Oh, 100%. Houses are going to be
unaffordable. So you got to think, like,
I bought that house in 18.
Mm-hmm.
With all my apartment flips, I renovated it. I put a couple hundred thousand in, and I sold it in 22.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 20. No, I'm sorry. I sold it in 23. Cool. I sold it in April of 23. I sold it for 1.545. So
nice.
And it was like a really good spread. So people are like, oh, the mortgage rates are so high. I mean, I walked away from a 2.4% rate. My payment was $2,400.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm paying taxes for that just in my townhome up in North Scottsdale. That's like, I'm sorry, like my taxes, my insurance that a month without a mortgage. So like, honestly, like, time is money. I used to drive, like, an hour and a half away for hockey practice a day to go to North Scottsdale. I'm like, I can't do this drive anymore.
Yeah.
Like, it comes to a point, like, like 3 hours a day is not worth my time for a lower payment. Sorry.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. So we got get educated.
Yeah.
Buy your course.
Yeah.
And
get the software really, because that can get you started really quickly. And people don't realize this, and people are like, well, I don't have the money, or I don't have this. If you find the deal, the money will come. And I know you know this. Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh yeah, for sure.
If you find a deal and you're able to tie it up, oh my God, the money will come.
Yeah, like you can't see it on here, but like one of our trainings here is Deal Finders Club. Like,
yeah,
I tell everyone, flippers, agents, whatever it is, like you got to have that skill of a wholesaler, right? Going direct off market. Can't beat that, because if you're not liking what the market's bringing, the deals are still out there.
I just got a deal from a wholesaler in Miami. I'm tying it up today, actually. It was a duplex in Miami that's just sold in October of 23. For $750, and it's beautiful. It's remodeled, and now like somehow the wholesaler got him to accept a contract at $580. I'm like, are they stupid?
You gotta be shopping.
Do they not know the market? I mean, like, I'll make $150,000 spread in like 30 days.
That's amazing. You gotta shop for deals. Yeah, but the
wholesaler doesn't like. I don't understand why the wholesaler's not buying the deal themselves, closing it, and then putting it on the market.
They don't either.
They don't know what they're doing.
They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah,
they're scared to do it, whatever it may be. But that's where the opportunity lies. He found opportunity from the homeowner. You're finding opportunity from him. Everyone wins down the road. So
yeah, but like eventually, you got to stop giving your deals away.
True.
You got to get on that like saddle, ride it, and make sure that you can actually make something happen for a legacy for yourself and your family.
So as we wind down here, are you going to start buying more? You're going to keep flipping?
I'm definitely going to buy more. If I was to hold something, I would want to go on a much larger deal.
Okay.
Yeah. Where I have,
awesome.
Like, I love like these quick deals with multifamily. They're very hard to cash flow. These smaller apartments are almost impossible for the price that we're buying them at to cash flow.
Yeah.
So
you're just flipping them to the people that.
Yeah. So okay. If I can make a 300 to 500% return, I'll do that, because how long is it going to take me to make that off of the cash flow?
Sure.
Sorry, I can't do that.
Yeah, I get it. All right. So how do we find you? How do we get a hold of you? What do we do?
GraceSiri.com is our brokerage if you need help buying or selling real estate. And then learningapartments.com is our website.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm on social media. I'm on YouTube, Facebook, Sophia Willits, WILLETS. And Sophia spelt with a PH.
Cool.
And then I'm on Instagram, TikTok, and all that. Sophia APTS for apartments.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to The Azria Show with your hosts, Marcus Maloney and Mike Delpreet. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you found this information valuable, head over to azria.org and learn more about our community.